Hey, Chloe, has anyone ever switched political parties?
You know what? I think Stephanie Trussell has.
Politics, culture, faith, and so much more. This is Fact of Life with Chloe Noller and Mattingly Watson on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.
Welcome back to the Fact of Life podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so excited for a special episode today. We have a fantastic guest coming on to talk about her life and fighting for conservative values. So, Maddie Grace, can you introduce Stephanie?
Yes. Yeah, so today we have Stephanie Trussell joining us. Recently, she spoke with the Hillsdale College Republicans group, but she is from the suburbs of Chicago, born and raised. And despite inheriting the Democratic Party, Stephanie has devoted her adult life to fighting for conservative values in the land of Lincoln. Stephanie is most known for her obsession with debating Democrats on public radio. In 2022, Stephanie ran for Lieutenant Governor of Illinois and has since served on Vivek Ramaswamy's presidential campaign. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Now, Stephanie, you like to say that you inherited the Democratic Party. What exactly do you mean by that? And how did you see that reflected in your upbringing?
Well, and when you're born in this packaging, I happen to be a black woman born in 1965. Chicago's deep blue, the deep blue Chicago machine, and black people vote Democrat. It's just not a question. It's something we never really talked politics in my family. But you just know that if you're black, you vote Democrat because we're told that Republicans are white, rich white people that don't care about you. And so you just never push back. You vote D and you never think about it. And that's just the culture, unfortunately. Well, then again, I'm 59. So I would like to believe now things are changing, but this is just the way it was. They have deep control. They've run Chicago since the 30s. That's really weird. They haven't had a Republican mayor since the 30s. So that's just how it is.
Were you always interested in politics growing up?
Not at all. I'm embarrassed. I'm so inspired by you guys being so young and being aware of politics and paying attention. In 1992, my husband bought a car for $1,400 and we were living in Rogers Park, a very commuter type area. So we shared a car and it only had an AM radio. And so you're limited to what you can listen to. And somehow we found WLS, the flagship major 50,000 watts with Rush Limbaugh on it and a bunch of local conservative hosts. And we just started listening to that. And that was just entertaining to me. I didn't agree with them, but I thought it was very entertaining. And then after a while, I realized that the values that they were talking about was something that I believed in. And I realized, son of a gun, I'm a Republican. And this is just, then I just came this rabbit, just every radio in my house, in the laundry room, everywhere I went, it was always on the radio. And it just helped, talk radio saved my life. It just changed everything I believed in.
You mentioned Rush Limbaugh. Were there any other talk radio hosts that really impacted you?
Well, if you're from Chicago, WLS had Don Wade and Roma, this couple. She was a Democrat and he was a Republican. And he was just this great personality, phenomenal guy. And I just felt like they were my radio parents in my head. And just he was so, as a matter of fact, he did this so much research and he would always talk about things that just I could understand, because sometimes you always think, well, I'm not going to be able to understand what they're talking about. I didn't go to college. They're talking over my head. So there were so many hosts that a guy named Rokan, and just he was my age, and they just really inspired me and just kind of woke me up to realize that you need to vote your values.
Now, if you're just now tuning in, we're interviewing Stephanie Trussell on Fact of Life on Radio Free Hillsdale. Now, Stephanie, how did you get involved in talk radio? Now, I know you said you listened to it a lot, but where was that transition from being the listener to being the broadcaster?
It's so weird. I started listening in 93, and I remember over the years, I would just think, gosh, I wish I could just win a contest so I could come in and sit in the back of the studio and watch my heroes work. If that had been a contest, it would have been over the moon. It would have been like going to Disney or something. So in 2012, I'm driving around in my 15-year-old minivan. I'm the super taking volleyball, basketball mom. I'm driving kids all around. And I hear my favorite radio station announce the America, they called it the Next Talk Star contest. It was very much like American Idol. They wanted amateurs to apply to win a 1 2-hour show. And so I talked myself in and out of entering this contest, I'm thinking, I'm just this high school graduate, this mom. How am I going to enter this contest? Why am I going to enter this contest? And then one of my dear friends, our kids were in a play group together, play date, and she's like, you should totally do it. You should totally do it. It was very hard for me. Technically, I had to submit this 4MG something. I don't know. This is 2012, so it's not as easy as it is. So I had to figure out how to do that, a 90-second submit of my voice talking about whatever. And my house was so crazy, I had to go to the library just to get a safe, quiet space to do this. I entered. Over 100 people entered. Somehow I made it to the top 10, and then I made it to the top 5 and competed live at this bar restaurant on air with a full audience, and everybody voted for me to win. I'm still pinching myself how that happened. It was crazy. And so a 1-2-hour show, a trip to Mexico led to me having 7 years on my favorite radio station. It was just quite phenomenal.
You say you didn't really get involved in radio and politics to your adult life. Mm-hmm. So what was it like getting involved while also being a full-time mom and wife?
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank goodness for talk radio, because I know a lot of people watch news, but yeah, I was always moving around so I could listen to talk radio. I could put on a Walkman or whatever back then before it was on our phone. I live in a small town outside in the suburbs, but our high school's so small, we have to play farming community. So you get on the road about an hour. So talk radio was a perfect entertainment for that. I was always multitasking. I've got my headphones on and I'm just listening to every room you go into my house, you turn on the radio in the laundry room or whatever, in the bathroom, there's talk radio. So that helped me multitask a lot. And if it's at a game sometime and it's a really good interview, I've got my earpiece in and I'm listening. So it just really made me, I don't know how I went from just like not knowing anything that's going on. I had a really very good education. I went to Catholic school, so I knew about the Constitution. I understand the three branches. That part I knew, but just all politics are local. And to get involved, you always kind of know what's going on in Chicago. There's always an alderman or someone being carted off to jail for whatever, and you understand it. But I didn't really start paying attention to, especially being a Black woman, how the policies of the Democrat disproportionately hurt our community. And I grew up in what people would call the ghetto. And when I grew up there, it was a safe, clean place to live. And then when I watch what happened to it over the years with these policies that were meant just to help people of my color wound up being a hindrance and just hurting them. I always say these programs meant to lift us up wound up hobbling the Black community. So it was just, I equate it to being a new Christian. You know, somebody just first gets saved and you're like, don't sit by him. They're going to be telling you about Jesus. That's how I was when I got saved in 1999. And that's how I was when I realized that I was a Republican. I just, don't sit next to me. I'm going to tell you, because they say don't talk religion and politics. Well, I'm going to talk about both of them if you sit by me. Right.
You say, like, you know, you wanted, as soon as you realized you were Republican, you wanted to tell everyone. What was the feedback like for that? I mean, I imagine people were a little bit surprised. So what was that feedback you got?
Well, you know, in my town, DuPage County, rather, it was very red when I moved there in 1994. Unfortunately, they've moved from Chicago and turned DuPage into Blue Page. But my little group of moms that I hung out with, I was in a book club. We were on every committee. I had a kid in every event. So those people in my inner circle were pretty cool. And we, traditional values, we all pretty much agree. But being a Black woman, your family is very surprised. And I just remember being afraid to tell people I was a Republican. I would say I'm a conservative first. I was just like, let's ease into this. And because people just immediately taken aback, they get angry sometimes, Black people, like, wait a minute, what do you mean? You're just not allowed. I joke that white people have the freedom to either be a Democrat or a Republican. Black people at that time, when I came out of the closet, that was just not acceptable. You're like, what are you talking about? How could you be? You know, they would get angry with me. And I even recently, I've had to spend weekends for birthday celebrations with women my age, all Democrat. And of course, I'm told not to talk politics. You know, it's just like, you can't say anything. And I'm like, why not? But they still, you know, I still get a little bit of pushback, but I'm not that demure, little quiet. I'm not going to say anything. I'm like, and if you want to debate me, I'm like, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. You know, I'm going to come for you. And a lot of these women that I hang out with, master's degrees, and they're so educated, they do this, and they're thinking, how is this little high school graduate going to debate me? I said, because I think about, I'm going to bring you facts. You're talking about feelings. And so I still get some pushback, but people kind of like, well, Stephanie, she's that crazy Republican. Like, she's okay. And I find myself going out of my way to be extra nice to these people to show I'm just a normal person. And when I get invited to liberal radio stations, I don't really say I get invited. I I make them invite me. I would bring cookies. I my husband's a phenomenal chef, and there's this one station, a liberal, it's a white progressive station, but they have a black show on Sundays, and they were just vicious to all these. And I just kept texting the guy, you need to have Republicans on this show. You need to have black Republicans. And he's like, you come. And I had my husband make this amazing lasagna and garlic bread, and I come in bearing gifts. I'm like, see, I'm a nice person, and then I'm just going to shred them. And I just love them. And so we're in the studio, and before we open, he's like, what college did you go to? I said, oh, I went to Northern Illinois University for about 5 minutes. But don't say that, because I didn't even finish a semester. But he was this elite black guy that had gone to Howard, HBCUs, and his best friend from Highland Park had gone to some elite college. He's an attorney, and another guy was an attorney from Mike McDonald's. So here I am, the one Republican with a high school diploma in this studio with all these learned people. He kept trying to insist doing my bio to say that I went to Northern. I'm like, no, don't say that. I don't want to false flag. I went. I'm just me, this mom driving around my minivan, and I'm going to take you on. And it was so funny. My mom's a big Democrat, but she's listening. And so she's getting mad. She's texting me, tell that guy to leave you alone. And I was like, I got this, mommy. This is like my fever dream, to be filled with a room with Democrats. And I don't care how many degrees and letters in front of your name, behind your name, I'm going to take you. Let's do this. And so that's kind of what I'm just crazy like that. I tease that I was dropped in my head that I'd rather be in a room full of Democrats trying to move the needle than just sit around with a bunch of Republicans agreeing with each other. You know.
Do you have any other particularly heated debates that from your time on the radio show that stand out from others in your memory?
Oh, my gosh. It's so amazing that over the years, as I said, I listened to the Black Talk station in Chicago. It's been on for 50 something years, all the blowhards, and they're just so confident. So I would listen to them. I go on social media and I stalk them and say, hi, could you come on my show? And I stalked the owner of the station and the main host for months. I even had a Lyle mom who's this gifted, talented woman, and she made cookies with their radio logo on it. And I put them in a pretty box from the Container Store, and I had them delivered. And, you know, and I just kept saying, get me on. And then they finally had me come in, and her office was like something, Oprah's office or something. And they come in, and we found out we all went to Catholic school together. Oh, we've all been tortured by nuns, lovingly. So we have this in common. So this sparked even now, that was 2017, debate and just this love-hate relationship. They hated having me on, but they loved the fact that the phones wouldn't stop ringing when I would come on. So they would just keep saying, well, you're crazy, but do you want to come on Tuesday? And so that's one of the times that I was literally in the belly of the beast. All the callers, they listen. Could you imagine you listen to the station every day and you're expecting to listen to Al Sharpton on a Memorial Day, and here's this crazy black Republican mom just talking, and the phones would just light up like, who is she? And I'm just like, bring it on. And so I just love it. And after the show's over with, I go to the restroom and come back to thank the producer, and the board still lit up. He's like, you did that. I'm like, what? Like, did I do that? I'm like, really? So I just love going into a room and people just assume I'm one thing. And then when I open my mouth, and as a radio host, I like to go to places surrounded by Democrats as a supposedly objective, you know, reporter. I went to a Bernie Sanders watch party. And I sat there and I tried to pretend that I was just one of them. And I was, this is like Comic-Con. They're just, it's weird. And I just like in the middle, like, sorry, I'm a Republican. I just got to tell you, like, this is crazy. That is, and I just, in a nice way. I never use profanity. I try to, you know, talk. And just respectfully, sometimes I'm a little of a sledgehammer and maybe I should be not so, you know, a little bit more pulled back. But I'm always just up for it, because I'm like, if I believe it, I shouldn't be afraid to hear the other side, because I know I'm confident. And I always say I like listening to the Democrats because maybe I'm wrong. So I'm going to keep listening to them to see I got this wrong. I was like, nope. After the debate, I know I'm right. I'm just reaffirmed in my values after a healthy debate with them. But I mean, LGBT community came for me during the campaign, which was interesting. They have protesters. I've never had protesters follow me from Springfield to Peoria one day. But I just, you know, you just when you have faith. And when I started running marathons, when I was a crazy middle-aged old woman, and before marathon, I always think about Muhammad Ali, and I would, you know, do like this little motion of him fighting. And then after this last weekend, and a Good Friday service and Easter, and I'm thinking, geez, I am a Christian. Forget about Muhammad Ali and what he had to do. Look what Jesus had to do. So how am I going to be fearful going into a battle, going into Jesus was surrounded by all these people, literally set out to kill him, and he did what he did. So that's just my inspiration. I always say Jesus was my running partner when I decided, after not being athletic for 48 years, to run a marathon. And so it's just your faith just really reaffirms what you know is right. And that's what my core values are, and that's what I base my values on.
How have you seen your faith impact how you interact with people or just like your views in general, like your radio and political experience?
Yeah, it's so funny. I had become a Republican, but I was still struggling with the life issue because it's such a prevalent thing. And I remember the attorney general at the time, I can't remember, was this Clinton? I just remember a local radio host who was a Chicago Christian on weekends, and he was just bashing the whole thing. And I was like, well, it's legal. It's legal. And then once I got saved and got baptized in 1999, it just changed so much of what I was speaking of and why I believe something. And so it just became so much easier. It's like, oh, both parties are the same. And I'm like, no, not really, because one party believes the life begins at conception. There are two sexes, and God is our Lord and Savior that gives us rights, where another party wants to be your God and tells you that God, that there are 57 sexes and that conception and life begins at whenever they decide that it's a life. And I've never been able to get a straight answer on that. And I've learned with my faith, because I used to just be like, look, I'm right, and I'm just going to say what I got to say. Now I'm learning to give them their argument and just be able to come back with something and not be so confrontational sometimes like I used to be as a Christian. Now I've kind of just been calmer and just shut up and let them say their part. And maybe a lot, sometimes I'm thinking, because I'm going to give you enough rope to hang yourself. But so it's just really just shaped and molded how I feel about so many things. It's just once you decide that you're a follower of Christ, how do you not implement that? It's just not about reading the book. It's about taking it out into the world. And God just will just give you the strength to do what you need to do and to go out there and on the battlefield and just and confident and hold your shoulders up and your chest out and just do it.
So you ran for Lieutenant Governor of Illinois in 2022. How did your decision to get involved in politics directly after being involved in talk radio for a few years come about?
Well, you know, it's so weird. I had no desire. I love interviewing politicians. I thought that was great. I love politics. But in my mind, people would say, you should run for school board. You should. And I was like, are you crazy? I just have a high school diploma. You got to be really, really, you know, super educated or something, or I'm not good enough. I just felt like there was no way. So a pastor, mutual friend of mine who runs a policy, the Illinois Family Institute in Illinois, I happened to be on the board. He called me one day and said, hey, Darren Bailey, who's running for governor, happened to be my pick at the time. He's from 4 hours away from me, but he had gotten famous for confronting our governor about the COVID policies. So in my mind, I had already started sharing his videos. I'm like, Darren Bailey's my guy. So he calls me on a Monday and says, Darren Bailey's going to be in Chicago on Wednesday. I told him he should interview for your lieutenant governor position. And I said, David, you shouldn't paint in a room without enough ventilation. You have to be out of your mind. What makes you think I'm qualified? And I could hear, I was a full-time granny nanny for my granddaughter. And I hear in my head, well, I got to babysit Sadie and I got to do this. What am I going to wear? And I just heard God say, I'm going to remove all that out of your way. Don't worry. Fast forward to me going, meeting him and he and his wife with my husband, hour and a half conversation. Good luck with them getting a word in edgewise. I was so nervous. And this is how I introduced myself to him. He said hello. And I said, nice to meet you. I didn't know people in my state talk like you, because he had this beautiful Southern drawl and he should have stopped the interview at that point. So it was months and months, a couple more interviews. And I got this opportunity that I didn't see coming. I was just praying for another opportunity to be on the radio, since University of Illinois had ended my career by buying out the Saturday lineup. And next thing I know, I'm out of the studio and I'm traveling this wonderful state that I grew up around, Chicagoland in the collar counties. I had no idea what our state offered south of 80. God gave me this opportunity to go to Amish communities, these little tiny communities on the river, and what I just had no idea. All this was in my wonderful state. It also gave me, being on the radio, I had so many connections already, especially in Chicago, where I could go to places and just walking the streets in some of the worst neighborhoods, talking to gangbangers, drug dealers. And just, this was an experience that I didn't see coming, but I'm so happy. Obviously sad that we didn't win, but I know God gave me that experience and that knowledge for some reason. And so I just try to use that and think about how, and now I have friends in 102 counties I can go and they'll offer me a piece of pie, or they, you know, and I can sleep over in their barn or whatever. They have these phenomenal barn dominiums, by the way. When you're driving on the highway, you're like, that's a nice barn. Yeah, don't be fooled. You go in there and those people are living like, oh my goodness. And so I learned a lot about my state, and I'm just so blessed that Darren, out of all the people, Darren Bailey picked me to be his lieutenant governor candidate.
So something that we really like to focus on in this show is really just encouraging young women and growing up in today's culture. And so something that we see a lot is that people believe they have like two distinct choices for women. You either stay at home and take care of your family, or you go out and get involved in politics or have a career and be successful. What would your advice to be to women that want to get more involved in politics?
I would certainly encourage it. It's a great opportunity. And I don't really think about being a woman. It's just like, this is what you believe in. We need more Christians to get involved in politics, more traditional people to be out there practicing their faith and practicing their values. And then making a decision, should I stay at home? I was this career-driven mom. I had gotten to this level that I never thought I would get to, and I wasn't walking in my faith yet. And I just heard this voice, I know now it's God, to tell me to stay home and take care of my kids and to walk away from more money than I had ever made. I don't have a college degree. I grew up in Chicago, and I had gotten a job with the city of Chicago. And the culture in the Black community, you got a job, you got a city job, you're on a biscuit train with gravy wheels, your life is made, your pension's going to be whatever. But then I just decided I want to stay home. Nothing was more important than me influencing my children. And I kept thinking, had I gone to college and gotten this degree, I probably would have felt, well, I have to work because I don't want to waste the money. So I knew that my role as a mom was so important to influence my kids. And then I would meet my friends that had a degree, and one of them said, well, why would I go out and put my kids in childcare? I have a degree. I can help. I can teach them. I can mold and shape them by that aspect. She felt being at home with her kids was a good thing. And so just this culture of, it's okay to want to be a traditional mom. You're not a loser. You're not giving up this. You're not, you know, they make it sound like it's lesser than because you're just a stay-at-home mom. And it's just nothing more. It just, I don't regret one. I mean, our lives change, our income change, and we had to make some, we drove to vacations instead of flying. But nothing's more important than I got to go to state with my daughter four times. I was the only mom that was available to watch all the girls in the hotel. Or I'm making these goodie bags for the track team when they make. I mean, all the stuff that I got to do, I wouldn't have been able to do. And I met so many kids that wanted to be on the soccer team, but their moms worked and they wouldn't have a way to get to practice. And I was just so happy that I made that decision that I think I should just stay home with my kids. At the time, I had three and I went on to have five. And I don't regret any of that. And if you can find a way to do both, that's great. But we just decided in our family it's better that my husband focus on going out there and making the almighty dollar. And I'd be immersed in the culture and the community. And so I know, no, you can't go to the party of that person's house because they've got, no. I heard about them because I just knew we had this little network of, you know, what's what and who's who. And I feel like had I worked full time, taking a train downtown Chicago, I would have missed out on all that. So, you know, you do whatever makes you feel good. But I have no regrets of staying home and not making a lot of money. And when I got the job with the city of Chicago, my best friend started working there at the same time. So I loved that I got to watch her vicariously. And she went on to do amazing things, work for the mayor and all these things. And she retired after 30 years because it's been 31 years since we got a job there. But her life was so different because she only had one kid. And I was like, I have, you know, and I moved out of the city and stuff. So I did get to see what maybe I could have been by watching her, but I don't have any regrets. Yeah.
So I know, like, once you started getting involved in radio and stuff, your kids were a little bit older, so mm-hmm. It was probably easier. But how did you kind of start integrating that balance of, okay, going to the radio a little bit, or even once you started running? I know they're older, so it's probably easier, but...
Yeah, and I just think, wow, I won the contest in 2012, and I have four, like, really big kids in a 9-year gap, and then Reagan. So, and I had said often, had 2002, I wouldn't have been able to... If I'd won that contest, I would have had to do the one show and just be done, because... I had four kids involved in each one of them. The minimum did two sports. There were scouts and there were so many things in the community I was involved in. So by the time I won, I had all the support. Oh, I can pick up Reagan for you and I can do this. And Reagan is not an athlete. So God just gave me this last kid that he has Asperger's, so brilliant. We debate in the car and all this, but my life was very different. Suddenly I had all this free time. I didn't have to get on the road and go in these farming communities and sit at a football game. I had the time. It was just God's perfect timing that would have happened at a time when all my kids were gone, a couple of in college already, or they would just really a big support team. And my husband at that point was working mostly from home, which was very different because he had worked at Northern for 12 years, a 45-minute commute. So everything just lined up at a perfect time for me to have the availability to be involved, to go to events. And in the beginning, there would be a lot of events that I wanted to go to, and I'd have to just say, I can't go because I've got a kid. He's young and I got to do this. But the more and more longer it went and he got to be more independent, and it's kind of sad that they don't need me. And just traveling for a year in the wonderful state, and Reagan, I text him or something, and, you know, he knows how to make his own breakfast. And I was like, you know, if I just come home every 5 days to do the laundry, everybody was happy. They were, you know, I talked to him, but nobody, I think the dog missed me more than anybody, but that's about it. Yeah.
Do you have any advice for young women who are wanting to, you know, like have a family mm-hmm. and want to be involved, but not necessarily on the political level, but how can they be involved in their day-to-day lives, making a difference mm-hmm. and upholding conservative values?
Well, you know, I always like to say all politics are local. Getting involved, I'm seeing more and more young people running for school board, you know, maybe volunteering or working for your state rep, because Illinois is deep blue. And our Springfield is just so, I mean, they have what the nuns would call, I remember teaching, improper fraction, the so many Democrats, so few Republicans, and just being able to go and do whatever you can on the local level. Yes, it's great to be to support who's ever running for president, but everything that affects you locally, that's what you should be involved in. And I just want to encourage people, because they might say, well, how can I get involved? And a lot of college students, internship opportunities, just to get to know what's happening in your community, what different bills are being introduced, because they're very aggressive. And there's so many opportunities for young people, because a lot of times they have a lot more, their schedule's a little bit more flexible, and the different entities are willing to work with them and just encourage them. There's a way for you to get your foot in. You don't necessarily have to know someone. You just show up and they're looking for warm bodies to go. You can do something as simple as becoming a precinct committeeman, where you have this area that you go out, you're the front line of informing voters. You get to know who the Republicans are in your community. You knock doors, you give out flyers, and somebody's running for office, they always need warm bodies. And I got a job for a governor candidate. No, she had run for governor. She was running for Congress this time in 2020. Here I'm, this loud talk show radio host involved in my community. I was so intimidated by knocking on doors, even in my community. I was just like, that's not my wheelhouse. And I was just so scared. And it's 2020 where people would yell at you for coming on their porch without a mask. And I got over that. I knocked over 3,000 doors. That's something that was totally outside my wheelhouse. And I was said, I remember the last day I was working for Jeannie Ives. And it was so cold, it's election day, and I'm doing the app on my phone. My thumbs would be out of my gloves, freezing. And I looked up, I said, God, this is the last time I'll ever knock doors, because this is just not my wheelhouse. I can't do it. I'm uncomfortable. And God kind of laughed and said, you will be running for lieutenant governor in a couple of years, and you will be knocking many more doors. And so there's always something you can do, no matter how small, whatever your gifts are, working an app on your phone just to send out text, or you know, working the actual phone, doing calls. There's something for young people or new people just to get involved. No matter, you could be nursing a baby and doing phone calls. You know, there's something you could do. Yeah.
Well, I love how you're mentioning all these opportunities on any level. You know, you can get involved on small amounts, bigger amounts. What do you think is the biggest obstacle facing the Republican Party, and how, especially as like up and coming young conservatives, help fight that battle specifically?
You know, I thought I knew so much about Illinois politics. And then as a candidate, I was like, oh my gosh, you're so naive. You have no idea how the sausage gets made, as they say. And the biggest problem, I think, with the Republican Party is lack of unity, lack of a definite message. We don't embrace our platform. Our platform is phenomenal. It's the best platform, but it's also the best kept secret. But we have candidates that run from our platform, and consultants will come in and say, well, don't talk about the life issue. Don't talk about LGBTQ. Why? Because your opponent in the general, not only are they talking about it, they're embracing it. They're wearing the skin of the, you know, we want to kill babies up until 9 months, and, you know, you can be whatever sex you want. And we're afraid of our platform. And I just said, I'm not going to necessarily, we could pretend and run from it, but they're going to bring it up. And you have to be prepared for how you are going to reply to that question. So you have to be confident in our platform, know it, and be able to communicate it successfully. That's what's so important. And that's our biggest issue. And so we have this battle in the Republican Party, the establishment professional Republicans versus the evangelical conservatives. And they feel that the reason we're losing is because we talk too much about that life issue. And we feel that we're losing, and you guys have been running it so long, and we in the super duper minority, it's because you guys haven't picked a lane. You're trying to be Democrat light. And Rush Limbaugh would always say, we can't be Democrats at being Democrats. So why are you trying to adapt their policies or be more like them? But they always want us to come to the middle to work together. I always joke, we got to reach out and they just slap us on the hand. Well, they come over here to us. I'm going to stand firm, and not that I'm frigid, but these are my values. I'm not going to compromise. I was thinking about running for state rep and all this advice I'm getting. So the woman that I'm running against, Catholic, mother of three, Democrat, third term or whatever, loves killing babies. Just this is what she does. And I'm supposed to show up and say, hi, vote for me instead of her. You can kill babies up to 14 weeks. No, they can just vote for her because they want to kill them up to 9 months. If you know, and this is just crazy. I'm just not going to compromise or not mention something because I want to lie or trick people into thinking I'm something that I'm not. Just be authentic. I think people are looking for that. That's refreshing, that somebody's not. That was so great about when I got to work with Vivek. He didn't have a speech writer. He just spoke. He'd get on and back after an event and just take his laptop and going to talk about what he just come up with. And it wasn't a bunch of advisors telling him, do this and say this. And that's, I think, the political advisors, these professional people that have companies, they come in and tell you how to run your campaign. And 2 days before the election, they already know you're going to lose. They're already thinking about the next election ahead, and because they make their 10%, they're out of here. And we got to stop listening to them and just listen to what our platform is, know what it is, and be able to communicate it and stand firm next to it and not waver.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Stephanie. It's been such a joy to interview you and hear from your experience. You have such great wisdom to share. So thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, no. Thank you guys for having me. I'm so inspired. I just want to shout it from the rooftops. If you have kids, you have to send them to Hillsdale. You're doing them a disservice. Just this campus is almost like central casting. I'm like, did you guys pay a bunch of people to pretend like this is an awesome campus? I just, once we leave, it's going to go back to a bunch of people just protesting, whatever. No, I've just felt so at home. And it's great to see people, young people that are living their values and just here to get a great education. And I feel like my cheeks hurt from smiling because you guys just make me so happy. And there are some normal college situations out there, traditional, that love America. Go figure. So much packed into this little campus. This is phenomenal.
Well, thank you so much. This has been the Stephanie Trussell interview on Fact of Life on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.
As always, my name is Chloe Noller.
And I am Mattingly Watson.
And this is Fact of Life.
The Fact of Life podcast can be found at Fact of Life Podcast on Instagram or at Fact of Life Pod on Twitter. Reach out to the host at factoflifepodcast@gmail.com or send a message on Instagram or Twitter. Listen to the Fact of Life anywhere you get your podcasts, especially right here on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on The Fact of Life.